All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman. And today I am joined by the Falcoholic himself, Dave Choate, and we are going to talk putting a button on Falcons free agency and start our pivot towards looking to this 2018 NFL draft.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
All right, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman, founder of FalFans.com, one of the longest-running Falcon fan sites on the internet, joined by somebody who has also operated one of the longest-running Falcon websites on the internet, none other than Dave Choate. You know him as the Falcoholic. Welcome back to the show, Dave.
It's good to be back.
Well, Dave, we're doing our sort of putting a button on free agency episode and sort of pivoting towards the draft. I always like having you on for this type of episode because I think you have much greater understanding of sort of the big picture stuff. And I can only one of the more memorable podcasts that we've done together was a very similar podcast that we did about 4 years ago, almost to the day, where we were talking about that 2014 free agency period and sort of questioning why did the Falcons do the things that they did in free agency, paying all this money for run defenders when they really needed a pass rush. And I think it really sort of, their decisions to do that really sort of pushed you into the direction of, oh, they must be trading up for Clowney because it's the only way that this makes any possible sense. Of course, they didn't do that. Didn't really select any pass rushers in that draft. Technically, their only real pass rusher was the last pick of that draft was Tyler Starr because Hageman wasn't necessarily that. And Prince Shimbo wound up moving from outside linebacker to inside linebacker. Not to bring up bad memories of that 2014 offseason, but I do always remember that episode and sort of we're going to kind of do a similar thing, but hopefully, obviously, it won't come crashing and burning like it did 4 years ago.
Yeah. Oh, boy. That was quite the time. I was so convinced that, the Falcons of that era did a lot of, as we discussed right before this episode, they did a lot of zagging when we thought they'd zig. And it wasn't always a good thing that they didn't zig. And I think maybe trading up for Clowney, would have been a foolish mistake given the team's needs and Clowney's slow start to his career. But I really hope that this isn't another year where Falcons have a really obvious identifiable need and they decide not to fix it.
Yeah, one of the reasons why I bring that up, because we're coming off the heels of a free agent period where the Falcons basically were probably the quietest they've ever been. And I think what it does is sort of raise expectations a little bit for the draft and sort of basically we're going to be basically looking at an offseason unless they make some big splash in the very near future, which doesn't seem likely, where pretty much the story of this offseason is going to depend heavily on who the Falcons select in this first round. And I do wonder a little bit because it seems like it's so screaming at us that they're going to go D-tackle given their needs. And maybe like it was that other time where they might wind up going in another direction. But we'll touch upon that a little bit later. But let's finish up and wrap up free agency. And sort of already mentioned that they didn't really do a whole lot. But if you could or would, what would you put sort of as a letter grade on this free agent period? And you're more than welcome to give them an I if you feel like it's incomplete, if that's how you feel. But go ahead and grade this free agent signing period.
Well, my usual cop-out answer would be I for incomplete. I will say that based on who they've signed so far, I'd probably put it at a C, maybe a C-. I think Brandon Fusco, it's a solid choice at right guard. I don't think he's a massive upgrade over Wes Schweitzer. I think he's enough of one that, at least for this season, that I understand why the move was made. He's sensibly priced. That all makes sense. I think that Justin Bethel's a good addition to special teams. Certainly, I think Logan Paulson looks like a mountain man, hopefully blocks like one too, so that's great. But, it's sort of, I guess the word that I would use is uninspiring. we knew, I guess, that they'd be pretty limited in their funds and certainly their scope and ambition. I think D-Led warned us multiple times that this was going to be the case, that they weren't going to make a huge investment, especially initially in free agency. But, you know, they've done some things to open up holes that maybe didn't exist before. The whole weird Shelby's gone, now he's back for a very slightly reduced salary thing was a little bit odd. And then, you know, they have these holes along the defensive line that they have to plug one way or the other, whether it is the draft or free agency. And so, you know, on those merits, it's definitely incomplete. I don't think we're done seeing what they're going to do on the line in particular, but I do think that, you know, who they've signed so far, they're fine. They make sense, but you know, not a lot of sizzle and not a lot of drastic improvement.
Fair enough. Yeah, I would probably go with like a B minus. I think the one thing I can say positively about the Falcons this offseason as opposed to previous offseason, they didn't make a move that ticked me off. Like last offseason with not re-signing DeMarco and the previous offseason with paying Sanu all that money. So kudos to them. I can't really go on my usual March and April rants about how this signing is awful or anything like that. I think they basically made three sort of low-key moves, middling moves, and trying to get the most bang for their buck, which, you know, they're basically shopping with quarters as opposed to dollars. And I think they were able to accomplish that to a certain extent. Before we move on, I want to let the listeners know that if you guys want to stay up to date on all the latest, whether that's the NFL, NBA, or MLB, you should check out LockedOnSports.com, your one-stop hub for the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. So, Dave, hopefully we don't have to talk about free agency anymore. Let's move towards the draft. And it seems like everything, as I mentioned before, is pointing towards the D-tackle position. Would you agree or disagree?
Yeah, 100% agree. And, you know, I'm not just saying that because I've been saying we're going to defensive tackles since December, and I'd like to be right, although there is an element of that. But, you know, the way they've positioned this offseason and sort of everything that we know about this team going forward, you know, they've set themselves up where the biggest need on this football team, I think, you know, in 2018, certainly, and arguably in 2018 and beyond, is defensive tackle. You need somebody next to Grady Jarrett. And, you know, with no long-term deal for a guy like Dontari Poe coming this offseason, it more or less has to be a rookie. There's got to be somebody that they're going to put in there to split time with Jack Crawford or however they're going to distribute those snaps and really be that long-term option, a fairly affordable long-term option next to Grady Jarrett, who's about to get paid. So I can't imagine the Falcons not going defensive tackle in the first round unless things really go awry and there's just none of their guys on the board.
We'll touch upon that a little bit later because I do want to follow up to that point. But, you know, there's been a lot of talk sort of with the possibility that one of the, you know, it seems like there's four main guys that are consistently mentioned at the top of the D-tackle class: Maurice Hurst, Vita Vea, Deron Payne, and Taven Bryan. I'm curious because of where the Falcons have sort of situated themselves. And what I mentioned earlier, where they haven't really made that big splash signing, so like the signature addition this offseason will be remembered for is whoever they get in this first round pick. I'm curious, sort of, do you feel like the Falcons have positioned themselves where if they don't land one of those four D tackles at the top of the draft, that, you know, in some ways this offseason could be considered a failure?
I think it could be. You know, I do think this is a good defensive tackle class. So I think if they get somebody in the second or third round that they really like, and they're comfortable with that, it could very well work out. But at the same time, it's certainly going to feel like a disappointment right away, because that is to me a gaping hole. I don't think we've seen enough from Jack Crawford in his career to say he'll hold down the fort this year and we'll let a young guy develop. It's just not going to work that well. It's opening up a huge hole that it feels like you should have filled if they don't get one of those guys. So I do think that you know, if that doesn't happen, I'll certainly be disappointed. At first, I'll want to see the plan as I always do, but it's going to feel like a missed opportunity.
And that being said, it does seem like that does raise the expectations that the team, you know, may wind up trading up, maybe not for Jadeveon Clowney, but if they sort of see these guys start to go and they sort of position themselves where, you know, at least the expectations are if they don't get one of these four guys, it's a massive whiff. Does that put more pressure on them to be willing to move up and try to nab one of these guys?
Yeah, I think it does. You know, the Falcons themselves will probably never admit that, but they never would anyways. But certainly, you know, from the perspective of the way they've geared this offseason and the people they've allowed to leave in free agency, I think there's a strong case to be made that if you aren't willing to swap up even a couple of spots to ensure you get one of these guys, that's going to feel like a failure. So I think that unless there's, you know, one guy left on the board and he's actually not a guy the Falcons are all that interested in at defensive tackle, and of course we won't know that either, you kind of got to get it done. You know, you can't, this is not the year for Trader Thomas and the group to let one of their favorite guys get away. They just can't really afford to do that.
Yeah, I've been saying many times on this podcast as of late that I'm not necessarily in favor of the team trading up, but it does seem like now that I've sort of sat here and thought about it, it does seem, I wouldn't say inevitable, but it does seem likelier by the day, unless they can sort of try to snag somebody out there in free agency that can sort of be the same as Logan Paulson or Brandon Fusco, which can sort of be a stopgap level starter. There's still a couple of names out there, but I think some of those guys, like the Benny Logans of the world, are potentially out of their price range, and the Jonathan Hankins, but we'll see. You know, I think that's one of the reasons why people are sort of eager to see this Matt Ryan deal get done sooner rather than later. But, you know, we'll see how that goes. But I'm curious, looking at these four D tackles at the top of the class, do you have yourself, I know you're not necessarily pouring through, you know, film or YouTube cut-ups or anything like that on a daily basis. But do you have sort of a preference, a hierarchy, a ranking of those four guys in terms of what you've seen or what you've heard that you would prefer those guys to, if the Falcons were targeting them?
Yeah, I think to me, Hurst is probably the best one in this class. And I think, you know, there's a lot of discussion about, you know, we can't put another smallish defensive tackle, you know, next to Grady Jarrett, but I think that's bunk. I think you can get by just fine. If the guy's good enough, he's good enough. And I think Hurst is the best one in this class. Beyond him, I'm a big fan of Daron Payne, and I always have been. So I'm hopeful, even though maybe he wasn't the most productive player in college, that he will be the one that they take, because I do think that Hurst, with his relatively clean bill of health, is probably going to go before the Falcons even get a shot at him. But I think Payne might be within trading range. So I'm hoping, you know, if you don't have to go way, way up to get him, that he'll be the guy. After that, it gets trickier for me. I think that Brian, in a lot of ways, seems like the logical choice, because as far as I know, he's projected to go late in the first. He's got that sort of connection with Dan Quinn. And he's just a Dan Quinn kind of player athletically. So he would make a lot of sense, but I'm not 100% sold on him being an impact guy right away. And I do think that both Hurst and Payne could be right away. And I think that the Falcons, to some extent, do have to weigh that. You don't want to pick a guy just because you think he's going to be the most productive player from day one. And I recognize that Brian has a lot of upside. But at the same time, if he's not going to be a major contributor right off the bat, that's probably going to be a problem, because to me, this is right in the middle of that open Super Bowl window, and you really can't afford to have a lot of weak positions on the roster.
Interesting. Where does Vea figure into this mix? Are you among the folks that are sort of like, there's no chance he's going to be on the board at that pick, so why even consider him? Or do you consider him a little bit lower than some of those other guys?
I personally consider him, and again, as you noted, you know, I'm not the number one guy to ask for draft stuff, but I do consider him to be a little bit behind the other three personally. And I also think it's possible, kind of perversely, that he might go early as well. I think it's possible, certainly, that he actually goes before Hurst, although I'm not 100% sold on that. So unless, you know, he's the guy that's on the board, I still think he's clearly among the top four in the class. So I think if you're sitting at 26 and he happens to get there and he's the only one left, you know, I'm not going to be unhappy if they pull the trigger on him. But to me, maybe the ceiling's not quite there the way it is with some of those other guys.
Interesting. We got more to come up with the Falcons draft plans, but since we're talking draft, you guys, of course, should check out Locked On NFL Draft Podcast with hosts John Ledyard and Trevor Sikkema, breaking down everything involving the 2018 NFL Draft Class, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Okay, Dave. I think it's interesting sort of how you ranked those guys. I think I personally would probably have Payne fourth on that list. I don't know. Like, I'm not completely sold on Payne. I feel like he's a relatively safe player because I feel like his floor is relatively high, but I don't know about his ceiling because I feel like outside of that national championship game where he really did dominate that game, but outside that game, I never really saw a high level of dominance, and I do wonder a little bit if he didn't have that performance against Georgia, would we even really consider him to be a first-round talent caliber player, at least in my opinion. So, I would not be upset if the Falcons took him, but he is more, in my eyes, more of a consolation prize. I'm sort of with you on Hurst being sort of the prize. I wouldn't necessarily trade up for him because, again, I'm not necessarily a huge fan of trading up in general. And Brian sort of is a kind of a low floor, high ceiling type of guy that I'm willing to, you know, roll the dice on Quinn and company being able to develop him, particularly Bryant Young. I feel like whoever the Falcons get will be in good hands, but not necessarily to the point where, I don't know. I was going to say something controversial, and I think I'll save it for a later date. But basically, I was going to say, like, I don't know if we've seen this coaching staff really develop the guys to the level that I think they probably, given the reputation that they have, but I don't know. I'm sure that's going to be a controversial statement to some people's ears, but yeah. So I'm curious, sort of moving on from D tackle position, if you had to put any money down on a position other than D tackle being the first round pick, is there a position where you feel, you know, reasonably confident that you're not just throwing your money away?
That's a great question. And I'm having a tough time with that one. I think I would have said before the off season unfolded the way that it did, the guard would have been my other choice. It would have been a logical choice. I still think it could be a logical choice, but at some point the Falcons are going to have to start, you know, tossing some ballast overboard if they add another guard. I think it's a good long-term play potentially for them. I don't know that they're clearly not high on Wes Schweitzer anymore. I don't know how they feel about Sean Harlow, which makes it tough to know if either of those guys are going to figure in the long-term plan at starter. And I think that, you know, Ben Garland's a free agent again after the year's up. Fusco's sort of a short-term option. Levitre's contract is up. So you could still take a guard, and I'd feel pretty good about it. I'd be a little disappointed it wasn't a defensive tackle, honestly, but I'd see the logic behind it. There's just a lot of guys on this roster right now, and a fair number of dollars tied up into that position. Other than that, the only other one that comes readily to mind is tight end, and that's sort of, if we've misread the team's faith in Hooper to this point, the Paulson signing to me suggested that the Falcons are content to kind of roll on with Hooper and see maybe what Eric Saubert has, which I'm on board with too. I think he's an interesting player, but you know, that's really about it in the first round. Anything else I think would come as a little bit of a surprise. You know, you could probably make a case for cornerback. If you're thinking about the future a little bit, if you're thinking about a post Robert Alford life, maybe, and you just want to shore up the talent you have at the position today. But again, that would surprise me if that was the pick. I think it's sort of either defensive tackle or bust, or if that's not what's on the board, I guess a guard or a tight end.
Yeah, I kind of went into this offseason thinking cornerback was sort of the dark horse signing, but with them signing Justin Bethel, with them re-signing both Bleedy Ray Wilson and Leon McFadden, and also the report that we came out of the combine that Dan Quinn said that DeMonte Casey will be in the mix at, in terms of the competition at nickel cornerback, it does seem like the team has made moves that indicate that they're relatively content with the level of competition at that position. I still feel like you can get a guy that can be a significant upgrade over all four of those guys in terms of boosting the competition at that nickel cornerback spot, including Brian Poole, particularly if you use the first round pick on a cornerback, with some of the guys that figure to be in the mix in the late first round. But it does seem like, you know, that's more of my wishful thinking than necessarily something that the team seems to be planning and pivoting towards. So we'll see what happens with that. It does seem like cornerback now is more like a late day three option as opposed to a possible day one option. And I'm with you. It does seem like, you know, guard would make sense, as you said, because of the long-term viability of that and sort of getting one of those premier guards in the top of the first or the back end of the first round at the top of the draft would be a huge upgrade over some of the current players that we have there. But it does seem like there is a glut of already sort of NFL caliber guys that the team is already willing to develop. And I think, you know, Schweitzer and Harlow still have room to grow in terms of their long-term development at that position. And if you were to use a first-round pick on a guard, it probably would mean that Harlow is going to get pushed out the door. And that basically would mean that you use the fourth-round pick on a player that you're already giving up a year later. And I don't think the Falcons necessarily want to be in the business of doing that. So yeah, I'm sort of with you that I think the value is there for the Falcons. It's an obvious choice in terms of getting, you know, quality talent, but it does have sort of ramifications for other players already on the roster that I don't think the Falcons are going to necessarily try to attract, I guess. Okay, Dave, I don't think I have anything other questions for you tonight. Are there any other thoughts that maybe you want to put out there in the ether before I let you go?
Yeah, just, you know, this has been the longest offseason ever, and I feel like I say this every year, but I'd like to repeat it again. It's just, you know, as hard as it is, I think we do have to let the off season play out. And I think the first week of free agency this year was even more intense than usual with folks just panicking and saying we're losing ground by the day, by the hour, by the minute. And the Falcons are going to fail and fall apart. And, you know, it's possible that will happen, but I think we owe it to ourselves just for the sake of our sanity to say, let's take a closer look at that in June, July, August, maybe before we panic.
Yeah, I do think, even though it's doesn't sound like it with how often I criticize him on this podcast and on my Twitter feed, I do think the team is in good hands. And even if you could come away thinking, oh man, this offseason, you know, however it plays out, even if we come away, you know, 2 months from now thinking, oh man, this was not, you know, Dan Quinn and company's best offseason, I do feel like it's, you know, you're allowed to have a couple of hiccups, because I do think the overall direction and momentum of the team is moving in the right direction, and has been the last couple of years, despite my many misgivings that generally are expressed around this time of year. So I do feel like even if this is considered a little bit of a hiccup offseason, worst case scenario, and again, not saying that that is the case, but worst case scenario, I do feel like overall you're still, you know, things are still on the right track. And unlike previous regimes, you know, where they sort of had their worst, one of their worst off seasons at a time when they couldn't afford to, referring to that 2014 year when they were sort of on thin ice. I feel like, you know, the foundation is strong currently with the Quinn regime, and you know, things will hopefully work out in the long run. We'll see how they go, but yeah, I'm meandering and rambling a little bit because it's so hard for me to say positive things about the Falcons. But I want to let people know that, you know, there's no need to panic, because even if they quote unquote have a, I guess the easiest way I would say it, spending 20 minutes explaining it when I could have just wrapped it up in two sentences, is basically even if they have a bad offseason, they're still probably going to win 10 games this year or more and be in the playoff mix. And so there's no reason to necessarily panic over some of these small details.
I agree.
All right, Dave, appreciate you coming on. Let the people know where they can find you and what you guys have coming up over at the Falcoholic.
Well, you can find us at www.thefalcoholic.com, on Twitter at The Falcoholic, on Facebook, the same thing. And this week we have a couple of interesting interviews with some draft prospects the Falcons have visited with, coming Wednesday and Friday, I think, this week. And otherwise, we'll just be starting to talk more about the draft, because that's hopefully the next big thing on the calendar.
All right, man. I appreciate it. And we'll talk to you soon. I'm sure we will certainly be touching base around draft time to see, sort of check in and see where our heads are at and whether anything has changed from this point on.
Sounds good to me. Thanks a lot.
All right, man. Have a good night.
You too.
All right, guys, that's it. Thanks to Dave for coming on. As you guys know, how this is the outro. Let's plug our stuff. Let's get in and let's get out. You can find me on Twitter at FalcFans. If it's podcast related, just let me know in the tweet if it is podcast related. You can just send it over to the show's Twitter handle at Locked On Falcons. If you prefer Facebook, Locked On Falcons is the Facebook page. Give us a like while you're there. If you prefer email, lockedonfalcons@mail.com is the email address. You can also leave a comment on lockedonfalcons.com and falcfans.com, where the show is posted daily. We'll be back later this week to talk about something. I don't have anything planned right now specifically, but I think we'll take a little bit of a deeper dive into the draft or and some other stuff. And or, you know, it'd be a perfect time for a Q&A. So if you guys have any questions, by all means, hit me up on those previously mentioned platforms and or addresses and or handles. And we'll get this thing moving in the right direction. April is going to be draft month for us, and we will start to sort of start putting things in perspective for you guys. So appreciate you guys for tuning in, and you guys stay locked on.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.